second. This is the Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means, and we have had some changes in terms of scheduling due to higher upper people creating a new special joint tax committee and deciding that it will meet at our time on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So we're still here today, but starting next week, this committee will try to jam all its work into Monday and Wednesday so we don't compete with the special joint tax committee. Senator Roblin.
Are we going to be here this Thursday?
Mr. Chair, members, I think given the topic had been Oregon Promise, which is a significant set of budget and policy, I don't think we'll meet because Representative Smith Warner did want to. She won't be here, and she wanted to be there.
I just want to make sure that people realize that that was a very special day and that we aren't going to be here is very disappointing to me because it's the 4th of May.
Is that your birthday?
Oh, it's Star Wars Day.
Are you going to dress up like a Wookiee?
Yeah, let's see.
Are you going to say what the special day is?
May the 4th be with
May
you.
May the 4th.
Oh, jeez.
May the 4th be with you.
I was here and I missed it.
I had to ask.
Always yeah, let the people ask.
So, Mr. Chair, in terms of the schedule, today we're going to hear about assessments, and tomorrow we'll hear about English language learners programs, and Thursday there will not be a meeting. In terms of today's meeting, we have the Department of Education going through a presentation of both sort of the alternatives for assessment costs, what the requirements are currently, both in federal and state law, and then there are some administrator or superintendents and principals from two school districts, Albany and Umatilla, to talk about sort of the local experiences slash costs slash whatever on assessments on the on districts, so you get a sense of what that is too. So that's today's agenda.
And Mr. Chair.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I just wanted to let everybody know, I apologize that both myself and Rep. Hernandez are on the new joint committee, and so I can assure you that I will be watching this hopefully by the end of today, and I wanted to thank everybody for being able to be here and the flexibility.
And the committee, the special joint committee on revenue is critical. I wish they weren't meeting at this time, but their work is absolutely essential. We want our co-chair, Barbara Smith-Warner, to be heavily involved in that. So we will try to accommodate and schedule as much as we can on Mondays and Wednesdays and proceed with that kind of a schedule. It wasn't something that I enjoyed, but I don't believe we should have two committees meeting at the same time that have key people that have to juggle between them. So I've done that in the past. It's not fun, and it doesn't work very well. This committee needs to be together, whole, all of us, to do our best work, because I believe it's the most important committee in the legislature. So with that, Barbara, do good work.
They could move. I checked this, everybody's schedules, and from 4 o'clock till 9 every Friday it's open.
Ooh.
And you could get all the same amount of time in. And
I'll bring that up.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much. Okay, who's up?
You'll want to open an informational hearing.
I will open an informational hearing on statewide student assessments.
And there should be a presentation, Mr. Chair, member, on today's schedule on OLIS.
Dr. Knorr, welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. Co-Chair Monroe, members of the committee, for the record, Salam Noor, Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction for the Oregon Department of Education, and I'm joined by
Don Huckabee, Assistant Superintendent, Office of Teaching, Learning, and Assessment.
Thank you for the opportunity to be before you today and to share some information with you relative to our statewide assessment system. Today's presentation will be focused on the assessment system, including state and federal requirements and cost drivers. I want to say that we are fully cognizant of the committee's interest in possible cost savings, yes, while maintaining a valid and reliable assessment system that we have in our state. We are prepared to share with you the actual costs, potential savings, and future investments based on the collaborative work that resulted in a new path forward for Oregon, a system of assessment to empower meaningful student learning, and the opportunities that have been afforded to us in our Every Student Succeeds Act plan. I share that with you because there's been a tremendous collaborative effort with the Department of Education, including the Governor's Office, Chief Ed Office, COSA, OSBA, the Oregon Education Association, and many teachers and educators relative to thinking about the assessment system that we want to have in the state of Oregon, and to move towards a vision that really focuses on assessment for learning rather than just assessment of learning. And this is really a balanced assessment system that we want for our students and believe benefits our students and benefits teaching and learning in the state of Oregon. I also want to share with you that assessment is an integral part of the teaching and learning process that has three key ingredients. We often spend a great deal of time talking about assessment, but we don't talk about the other two ingredients, which is curriculum and instruction. So to have a quality education system in our state, you need to have all three legs of the stool: curriculum, instruction, and assessment. Curriculum is represented through our content standards in all the subject areas and not just in English and math. And instruction is our pedagogy. It's the way we think about delivering instruction, the way we engage students, the way we present information and facilitate learning with students. And the assessment really answers a key question: are students learning? How do we know that they're learning? And if they're not learning, what types of supports and interventions we provide in order to ensure that they are learning? And this is an interactive process, and these are components of a balanced assessment system that has formative, interim, and summative assessment. Each has its purpose, each has its place, its role, and function in the teaching and learning process. And that is what we're committed to, and that is the vision that we have for our state and for our educators. And we also want to recognize that as we talk about assessment, it is also a process. It's a process that involves the content, it involves the student, and it involves the teacher. And that is what Elmore refers to as the instructional core. And those three ingredients are really integral to making sure that instruction is delivered in a quality fashion, in a relevant and engaging fashion, so students are successful. So I wanted to preface our presentation today by this framework that shows our commitment and our vision for a broader conversation relative to assessment. And it's about assessment literacy. It's about balanced assessment systems that includes all three elements: formative, interim, and summative, rather than just focusing our conversation exclusively on summative assessments. So this is our outline for the presentation today. Don is going to share with you information relative to state and federal requirements and the actual cost of doing business, the actual cost of assessment. And then I'll have an opportunity to share with you some challenges and opportunities and some potential savings relative to that. I think if we look at assessment and how it is utilized today, because assessment provides a lot of key information about student performance, and we often ask ourselves, so what do we do with this information? Why is it relevant? Why is it really critical for us to have? Because we go to a lot of expense and a lot of trouble, if you will, to actually develop and generate this information. So key, in my opinion, is how teachers use this information on a regular basis, and that's where formative and interim assessments come into play. So it's used by teachers to identify supports and interventions that are needed in a timely fashion for students, and that's the ideal use of assessment. The summative assessment that we administer at the end of the school year is designed specifically for accountability. It's designed to inform how the system is doing, how are schools doing, and that provides opportunities for us as a state to think about interventions, to think about supports, to think about building capacity, and professional development and other resources that we can provide for schools and districts. We also use that to inform our policy work. Is our assessment delivering what we expect to deliver? Are we learning from it what we need to learn? Are we acting on this information in a very intentional way? We use it also for accountability purposes. A lot of the information that we glean from the assessment is provided to parents and communities relative to how students are doing, and we use that to determine how schools are doing through our report card. That is an accountability purpose. We use some of this information for a regulatory purpose, and that is to satisfy our obligations to the U.S. Department of Education and also to publish a number of reports that are required by both the state and the federal government. So there are multiple uses for this information that we gathered on an annual basis, but most importantly, it's critical how schools use this information, how teachers use this information, and we are committed to thinking about and providing this information in a timely fashion so teachers can use it and act on it right away, and schools and districts can use it to modify their instruction, to modify their curriculum frameworks, their pacing guides, the supports and professional development that they provide to teachers as well as students. So this gives you a sense, and we can go into a lot more detail here if you would like, but this gives you a broad sense of how this information is used from a policy and a practical perspective. Done.
So the next part of this presentation is really to give you a sense and understanding of what are our requirements, both from the federal perspective as well as from the state. Co-Chair Monroe, members of the committee, I'm Dawn Huckabee, and glad to be here. Thank you. First, under our federal requirements, under the new Every Student Succeed Acts, we are still required to, for every state, to annually assess our students in English language arts, mathematics, and in science. The requirement is that every student grades 3 through 8 and once in high school will take the assessments in English language arts and mathematics. And the science assessment is required once in the elementary grade levels, once in the middle school grade levels, and once at high school. Here in Oregon, we choose to give that science assessment at grade 5, grade 8, and grade 11. The federal requirements also expect that we will have 95% participation of our students that participate in the state assessments in all three areas, mathematics, language arts, and science. The federal requirements also have us that we must assess our English learners to determine their progress in attaining English language proficiency. And they are assessed in the domains of their listening skills in English, speaking skills, reading, and their writing skills. Also, federally, because we receive Title I-A funds, we must participate in the National Assessment of Education Progress, or the NAEP test, in math and reading at grades 4 through 8. And those are given biennially. Our state requirements, at least in English language arts, math, and science, mirror the federal requirements. So our Oregon law requires a math, a language arts, and a science assessment. In our state, we do have an opt-out law, which does allow parents to opt their children out of participation in these state assessments. However, that does not negate or change our requirement for federal participation rates. Our social science assessment must be made available for students. Again, this is state law. However, participation by districts is optional. Our Oregon law is consistent with the federal law as far as the English language proficiency requirement. We have an administrative rule that requires school districts to administer an Oregon kindergarten assessment to students when they enroll in kindergarten. There's a state statute that requires that all 10th grade students be provided access and an opportunity to take a nationally normed assessment.
Representative Wisnett has a question.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Coacher, and I'm glad you're back and healthy.
Well, sort of.
Assistant Superintendent, you said that the federal requirements and state requirements, but school districts can opt out of it? Please explain to me.
Yes.
That.
Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Wisnett. Parents may opt their children out of the assessment. The state can't opt students out, nor can a school district opt students out. It's a parent, as part of a parent bill of rights.
Thank you. I missed that. Thank
yes.
You.
Except in social
Senator
studies.
Senator Roblin?
Social studies assessment is not a federal requirement, and so
it's voluntary.
It's voluntary.
Can you, Mr. Kutcher, thank you.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you. Assistant Superintendent, what is social science? What are you talking about? Is that civics and things like that?
Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Wisnett, the social science assessment assesses content in the social sciences. So history, there's some civics. It's a broad-based, and it's the assessment itself has multiple choice, constructed response. And then we also have a social sciences inquiry opportunity for students to
Quick
take as well.
Quick follow-up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Go ahead.
do you have any explanation of why the federal government, our federal leaders, thought that was so important?
Co-Chairman Rowe, Representative Wisnett, social sciences is not one of the federal requirements. That is only a state requirement that we must offer the assessment to schools and districts for students to take, but then districts have the option to take it. So it's required by state law to be made available, but not required for students to take. It's not a federal requirement.
And this is really a little bit outside, Mr. Co-Chair.
Go ahead.
Did we change our 24 units required as a state requirement for graduation? Is that, does ESS talk about a number or anything? That's still up to the state. Our graduation is 24 units.
Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Wisnett, yes, our requirement is still 24.
Thank you for
credits.
That.
Yes.
Good line of questioning, Gene. I spent 30 years teaching that stuff that is somehow less important, according to somebody.
I think it's important, Mr. Co-Chair.
Absolutely.
The last requirement that we have on the books for, from a state perspective, is that there's a requirement to administer, for districts to administer local performance assessments annually to students in grades 3 through 8 and at least once in high school. We do not collect this data nor audit these assessments. These particular assessments are curriculum-based and curriculum-embedded. We do have some work samples. That's one way for students to demonstrate requirements to these local performance. They really are performance-based. They're not multiple choice. They're an opportunity for students to demonstrate the broad base of skills in the content areas. They are required in writing, mathematics, science, and speaking. So again, in those grade levels, those are the kinds of local performance assessments that are being done.
Senator Roberts.
So when we take, maybe you're going to come to this later, when you take all of those assessments that are required and otherwise, including the state ones, have we figured out how many hours that would take for a student to complete? I mean, some of them are not time sensitive, so it's hard to do that, but there might be an average. But how much time of the school year is spent just on doing the assessments? Do we know that or have any idea of how much that is?
Senator Roblin, we do have a sense from the state assessment perspective, the English, and it depends upon grade level, depends upon the student.
Yep.
I believe on average, the students, it will take about a little over an hour to an hour and a half to take the mathematics assessment. And because the language arts assessment is both a reading assessment as well as a writing assessment, there's two components to it. It takes two and a half at the top, you know, in an average of those. Science typically is about an hour to take the assessment. The local performance assessments, really, again, from a state-required local performance assessment, because they're curriculum embedded, they can be as short or as long as there's a standardized mean for evaluating them through either a state rubric or some other locally developed rubric. So those can be, you know, the state writing assessment used to be three 45-minute blocks, but a school district might choose to do that in a shorter amount of time.
Okay, thank you.
And Senator Roblin is starting to get at the real thrust. We're looking for savings, not just savings in dollars, but savings in teaching time.
Yep. Yep.
So dual savings, which is critical. We hear from teachers from all over the state that they have to spend way too much time testing their kids and don't have enough time to teach them. So that's pretty critical. And of course, we're in a tight budget situation. So fiscal savings are critical as well. So dual savings, savings of teaching time, savings of education dollars.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks, Don.
This slide, it just highlights what I shared and what are the specific basis for the requirements, both from a federal perspective as well as the either statute or administrative rule that apply to the assessments as they are required. This next session, we'll move into the student assessment cost, and again, from the fiscal side of it. In our 2017-19 modified current service level for student assessments, our budget request is $24 million. The governor's recommended budget does include a policy option package, which includes $3.1 million for student assessments. And the cost for the administering our student assessments as a statewide level is really driven by three key components. components. One is the cost of state oversight and technical assistance. Another one is the cost for administering the student assessments and tests. And the third cost is the cost of the testing content, or as you think about it, the items that the students see. And so you see from how those percentages break out, the cost of oversight and technical assistance is just under 15%. The cost to the test administration is 71%. And then the content itself is another almost 15%. So in the following slides, I will go through to really describe what each of those three components is and what it each comprises. So in the first one is the state oversight and technical assistance. Our CSL estimate to provide this is approximately $3.5 million, and that includes 12 FTE at the State Department of Education. These are the staff in the assessment unit within the Office of Teaching, Learning, and Assessment that are responsible for that state oversight and providing the technical assistance. They are required to really look at and establish the vision, the mission, and our goals consistent with the agency objectives regarding assessment and aligning those to the state and federal requirements. They manage the policy development. They ensure the quality of the assessments. They engage stakeholders, and they are the key line of communication with both the field as well as with state agencies beyond the Oregon Department of Education and with the federal government. They facilitate the development of our statewide assessments. They make the technical documents. They train. They provide interpretive materials, such as things like the test administration manual, provide training modules for the district test coordinators, school test coordinators.
Representative Wisney.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Assistant Superintendent, aren't we buying off-the-shelf tests?
Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Wisnett, we developed the test through the Smarter Balance Consortium. So it's not a bought test. We still create a blueprint with them that matches and aligns with our standards. So it's not a just off the shelf purchased resource.
Thank you.
The other things that they do is in the team does in looking at the, again, with the particular assessments that we are using is to make sure that they are technically adequate and that they do provide the information that is needed both from a federal government perspective as well as guidance to our stakeholders. And they coordinate with our schools and districts the assessment systems, the technology requirements, and then all technical assistance that's required for schools and districts to perform the assessments. And again, these are the state summative assessments that we're primarily discussing, although they do have some work around the formative and interim through some grant and aid pilots that we've done. This gives you a sense of the staff that are, these are the 12 FTE that are currently in the Office of Assessment. And to we have on the left side, you see we have these are our content specialists. So they know the content and understand what's the assessment is within each of those content areas. We have some system support and then also then all the administrative support to be able to really work in communications with the field and then also to facilitate the contracts and the work that goes on. The second component is the largest piece of the budget, and this is the student testing administration. And this is provided primarily through a service contract that we have with the American Institutes for Research, or AIR. They are the primary deliverer of the assessment. Most of our assessments are delivered online. And so they provide the online technical support, the actual platform that delivers the test to the students. And as you can see there, over between English language arts, mathematics, science, social sciences, they deliver over 1.6 million tests to our students. The services they provide, they host 5 online assessment systems. They print and distribute the services that are required for our manual kindergarten testing materials. And then they are the user management test delivery. They score and report for all of the student assessments. In addition to the $17.5 million in student testing administration, we also then provide funds through the state school fund carve out to pay for that 10th grade opportunity to take take a nationally norm test. In this case, it's the PSAT. And in 2015-16, approximately $368,000 of funding was used to support almost 31,000 students in having access to that assessment and actually in taking that assessment. The third component is the student testing content. And so this is, again, about $3.5 million. And this is, in our CSL estimate, it's our current consortium agreement with the Smarter Balanced Consortium for the Math and English Language Arts Assessment. Again, these are the particular items, so it's our purchasing of rights to use the content. If we did not use a consortium, we would have to incur those costs ourselves to develop the content. This particular agreement that we have with the Smarter Balanced Consortium provides access to those summative assessments, and it's their item and test development services. They do all the assessment research on those items. They do psychometric analysis and the reporting. They do technical documentation and support, and they provide a very wide array of accessibility supports for our students, including Braille, American Sign Language, and closed captioning. And so as those assessments are delivered, our students have access to those very rich accessibility reports. There's also a secondary agreement that we have with the governor that's part of the governor's budget with the University of California, Los Angeles, that would represent similar services for our English language proficiency. And as we shared in our presentations a month ago, we are in the second year of our English language proficiency assessment, our second year of ELPA 21. And prior to this, we've been able to fund that through a grant, and that grant funding goes away. And so we will need a secondary agreement to continue to use those items for the English language proficiency. The next piece here is really around our recommended policy package number 106. And so in addition to the governor's recommended budget, we do have POP 106, which is a $3.1 million increased resources for students' assessments. Approximately $1.3 million of that is required just for the ongoing cost of both test administration and content for the ELPA assessment, as which I mentioned, that was rolled out here in 2015-17. A one-time investment of $1.5 million is needed to develop a new science assessment that is aligned with our next generation science standards that were adopted by the State Board in March of 2014. And we've also estimated a one-time $135,000 investment to automate our current kindergarten assessment. This POP requests an increase of one FTE to manage the increased workload related to the state oversight and that new assessment development. And just to highlight, $2.8 million of that $3.1 for the ELPA and the new science assessment is necessary to maintain our state and federal requirements. Other program or operation reductions would be necessary should this policy option package not be approved. Those are the ELPA and the science assessment. We must get both of those in line to be meeting the federal requirements as well as our state. The next few slides are some numbers, and so it shows how what I've just described break out from a budgetary perspective. So you see where we are with our approximately $24 million with the current service level as modified, where the resources go in those three key areas in with the policy option package, and then what is the total, and then you show that there is what's the percentage increase over current service level. And so you see the big increase there is really around that student assessment development. We've not had to do that, but with the ELPA 21 and the science, and then the kindergarten, actually this is mostly just science and kindergarten assessment, and the big part of that is the science development.
Representative Parrish.
On that last slide, so I just want to clarify because, you know, I get lots of emails from people about, oh, we're spending hundreds of millions of dollars on testing kids. And so the $27 million includes then, just for my own clarity, your cost at the state level, but then dollars rolled out to school districts to administer tests.
but the school districts don't have additional cost, or that's your cost?
Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Parrish, this is the state cost to administer the assessments. Districts will have some additional costs of staffing to conduct the assessments. We provide all the materials. They obviously will need computers to be able to deliver the assessments. But if it's a paper pencil test, we give them all of those resources. But there is a time cost.
Go ahead.
So do we have a sense of what that time cost is? Have we quantified that somewhere?
Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Parrish, I'm guessing that our partners in the room will be able to share from a local district perspective what their costs are.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Senator Roblin.
So we currently have a contract to get the materials. Mm-hmm. Is that up? And do we pay something, do we do an RFP to find out if these costs could go down or up with that group from time to time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you want to
sure. Yeah. Co-Chair Monroe, Senator Roblin, we do have a contract. We have two contracts essentially right now. One is with the Smarter Balance Assessment Consortium, and that provides us access to the materials. And I think it's in the realm of $3.5 million a biennium. And we do have a contract with AIR, and that is the company that actually delivers the test. So we evaluate those contracts on an annual basis. We have not considered new contracts are going in a different direction, but I will be prepared to discuss with you some ideas that we have and would welcome some feedback and thoughts from you relative to that. But we do review the contract with them, and we are in the process of reviewing our engagement and relationship with SBAC. There are some challenges. There are some limitations that we have to adhere to. One is access to items. So the items that we currently have are not available elsewhere. So we have this relationship with SBAC, and we can discuss the nature of the relationship. Currently, we're members of the consortium. We considered the possibility of having a licensure agreement with the consortium. Unfortunately, the cost is the same. So whether you're a member or you just want to access the items, the cost is the same. Some of the cost savings with AIR, I will discuss in the next couple of slides. Yep. And I can share with you our thinking then. So.
This slide is to give you a sense of what's the average cost per student per year on particular assessments. So it's taking how we've taken up the cost of the state administration, the cost of the test administration, and the cost of the content, and then by content area and estimated how many students take the test each year, and what's the average cost. So our assessment in total, when you look at all five assessments, is just under $24 per student to deliver those assessments. This next table really now shows how those numbers came to be. And so you see where the state oversight is and how many FTE are devoted to those elements, and what's the total annual cost, what's the biennial cost. Then you see the student testing administration and the content. We've broken those out separately for you. We've also then identified within those areas how the policy option package lays out and the approximate FTE that goes with that. And then you see there, again, just laying out all these previous slides in one place for you. So with that, I'm going to turn it back to Dr. Knorr.
Right. Thank you, Don. So up to this point, we shared with you some of the requirements for assessment and testing at the state level to fulfill both our state and federal obligations. We talked a little bit about cost drivers and how we arrive at those as to the per student cost. I would like to discuss with you the current landscape, if you will, and that is the issues and challenges that we're currently facing as a state relative to assessment. We as a state have really excelled in developing summative assessments. We've been recognized nationally for the development of the test and the delivery of the test for many, many years. We're considered to be a leader in assessment. We used to play a really critical role in performance assessments and formative assessments and interim assessments. And we've lost our way a little bit as a result of shrinking budgets and focus on summative assessment that was used almost exclusively for everything. And that is an inappropriate use of that summative assessment. It has its place and function and role. However, since the implementation of Smarter Balance, we have all heard about challenges with the implementation of that assessment. And Senator Monroe, you've referred to some of those: time, cost, the amount of time it takes to prepare students to take the assessment and then the actual time of the assessment. In actuality, it could be up to 90 minutes, an hour. But since we didn't put a limit on the amount of time that a student can take the assessment, in some instances we're hearing that it takes up to 3, 4, 5, 6 hours, sometimes 3 consecutive days for a student to take the assessment. And that is a positive feature in terms of not putting a limit on it, but at the same time, it affects instructional time and it leads to loss of instructional time. We also heard about the ability of teachers to access that information immediately. That information has to be validated. There is a time lapse in terms of when it's provided to teachers and schools, and quite often the students have moved on to the next grade. And if they're moving on from elementary to middle to high, then the opportunity is lost to intervene and provide support for that student at the time. So those are all challenges, and there may be others. We also, in our state, in the 2015 legislative session, we provided the parents the option to opt their student out of the state assessment. And the federal law now, under ESSA, provides that option for parents and students as well. So if we have an increasing number of students opting out of the assessment, because at the high school level specifically, it's competing with other assessments that students need to take, such as their AP test, IB exams, finals, et cetera. That's where we see the most opt-outs. It really diminishes our ability to be able to compare schools from year to year. So the accountability purpose is lost in the process. And we also heard in our community forums around the Every Student Succeeds Act and our various interactions with superintendents and educators around the state that we would like to have a different assessment at the high school level. And we've heard that from you, legislators, as well, and especially based on the information that was shared with you by us and the Oregon Education Association and others relative to the new Path Forward framework that really designs and creates a new framework for assessment in the state of Oregon that includes both all three elements, formative, interim, and summative. So all of those things have really culminated in this new vision that we want to share with you and propose to you today. Given all of that, we're also mindful of the fact that we have a budget deficit. We have some fiscal constraints that we need to be mindful of. So if we were to consider other assessments at the high school level in particular, and this is something that was provided to us as flexibility under the Every Student Succeeds Act, we can actually choose a different assessment, such as nationally recognized norm referenced assessments. We typically think of ACT and SAT, and there are many others out there. So those are possibilities at the high school level, and that will also have an impact on what we do grades 3 through 8, because we need to make sure that that assessment is aligned. I also want to underscore what we heard from the field and what I've heard from legislators as well in various interactions, that we need to have formative and interim assessment tools made available to teachers, because that's what teachers are asking for. Those are the tools that will have the most positive and immediate effect on instruction. So just to give you that as backdrop to cost savings, in the governor's recommended budget, ODE is required to identify and implement $1.7 million in reductions for student assessments. And the way we propose to do that is through renegotiating contracts with both the Smarter Balance Assessment Consortium and AIR. And that's the strategy that we're going to use. And we believe that we will be successful in renegotiating some of these contracts that will reduce the cost of development and delivery of the test. With SBAC, we know for a fact that the price is fixed. We're still in conversations with them, but from what we understand, there is an option to purchase a license, but the price is fixed. However, if we're successful in achieving these cost savings, we would be able to achieve the $1.7 million in reductions, as well as an additional $811,000 that could be applied to the cost of policy option package 106, and that was highlighted on page 12 of the presentation that Don just shared with you. So this estimated $2.5 million in cost savings would be generated through a couple of things. One is reducing the number of items that we include on tests. So to your point, Co-Chair Monroe, that makes it a shorter test.
Yeah.
Will not take as much time to prepare for the test or to administer the test. We would also adjust and modify the way some items are actually scored on the test. Currently, we have items that are hand-scored. That means a live person is looking at the item and scoring that item. That is very cost intensive. So these are some modifications that we can do that will shorten the test, and most importantly, really put the test in the right context. And with formative and interim assessments available, that will provide a much deeper and richer level of information for teachers to use. So this estimated $2.5 million in cost would be achieved through that avenue. Now, I'm sure you're pleased that I shared with you some potential cost savings. So I want to apologize in advance, because what I'm about to share with you is almost the opposite. It's not almost. It is the opposite of what I just shared, what I suggested.
I knew that was coming.
And that's why I wanted to really lay out this vision for you, because it's based on what we've all been talking about. It's what we want to provide for teachers and educators in the state of Oregon that will help students be successful. So we've taken advantage of the opportunities that have been provided to us under the Every Student Succeeds Act, and we are in the process of conducting a request for information that we will put out there and invite vendors to tell us what they have available that is aligned to the Common Core State Standards and that meets a set of specifications that we established as a state assessment. So we're inviting vendors such as SAT, ACT, and others to provide us this information. This information will be used then to develop a request for proposals that will go through a state procurement process, a competitive process. And from that, we can select the test provider for our high school students. And there is an 18-month kind of time frame for that to actually happen. Based on the information that we've received from other states that are currently administering SAT and ACT, the per-student test administration cost is about $46 a student. So I will remind you to what we shared with you earlier. Our cost currently is about $24 per student. I am confident that we will be able to negotiate a much more competitive price than $46 per student. In fact, we will insist on it. It has to be competitive. It has to be fairly close to the other costs that we use to administer tests in our state. Yeah. But if we were to provide this different assessment that we consider to have a value add, if you will, an assessment that is readily accepted by post-secondary institutions, an assessment that also really amplifies our commitment as a state to equity, because when you provide this type of assessment that is used by colleges and universities for admission and placement purposes, you're affording every student the opportunity to be eligible to go to college. So this also satisfies some equity priorities and objectives that we have as a state. And it's something that we're very excited about, and we think it will address many of the challenges that we discussed earlier. So if it's a nationally recognized norm reference assessment such as SAT, ACT, it's something that we know students will be eager to take. It has currency and value to parents. It will reduce, if not eliminate, opt-outs at the high school level. So based on this estimate, and I want to underscore estimate, the net cost increase of implementing a new test for high school and discontinuing the current test is approximately $2.4 million. If this were the direction that the legislature and we as a state choose to go, this investment, along with the policy option package 106 and estimated cost savings, will result in a $3 million increase to the 17-19 modified CSL for student assessments. If we were to add formative and interim assessment to have this complete and balanced assessment system that has formative, interim, and summative, we are estimating an additional cost of $4 million, and that is based on a per-pupil cost that provides tools, resources, materials for teachers to use around the state. And this also has an equitable component, because when we provide it as a state, we will make sure that every teacher in every school and district in the state has it. So we've attempted to identify costs, and we believe we can be successful in achieving those cost savings, but I also want you to know that there are some additional costs and investments if we were to have this complete and balanced assessment system in the state of Oregon in the sum of $7 million. That will be an increase from our current CS level.
Are we spending money as a state to help students who want to take the PSAT test? Isn't there a budget?
Yes.
Already?
Yes. Did you talk about that? Or okay.
Because if yes, they're all taking it, we wouldn't be spending that money. That would be my assumption.
Right. Yeah. Students have the opportunity. Excuse me. Senator Monroe, Senator Roblin, students have the option to take the PSAT. We have a contract with College Board as a state. I believe the cost is about, I want to say $700,000 a biennium, mm-hmm. approximately. Yeah, and that provides an opportunity for every student to take that test.
That's the PSAT.
PSAT, yeah.
Not the SAT.
The pre-SAT, yeah. And it's typically
it's the 11th grade when we use it
yeah.
in
yeah,
some way.
Usually 11th grade is when they take
that.
10th grade, yeah.
10th grade.
Or 10th
grade. Yeah, yeah.
10th grade?
Yeah. Yep.
Sophomore?
Yes.
They can take it both times.
They can take it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But we administer it in 10th grade, I believe.
Representative Lively.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So just so I have this, this is a, I don't know, my head's spinning over all this assessment, but just so I have it clear, the last part we've talked about, it only applies to high school. All the assessments that we talked about earlier that apply K through 8 or 9 will remain the same. So the change that we're talking about is just how we would change for high schools. And these, this, if we move to this model, would replace all the mm-hmm. current assessments we're doing in high school.
Yeah, yeah. Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Lively, thank you for your question and the clarification. So what we are proposing and considering at this time is a change to the high school assessment, and that the SBAC essentially would be replaced with a nationally recognized norm-referenced assessment such as ACT, SAT, and perhaps others. On the grades 3 through 8 assessment, we would maintain the current assessment, but we would suggest some modifications to it. We may not call it SBAC, simply because it will no longer be. The thinking is that we would be able to purchase items from the Smarter Balance Assessment Consortium and then work with our vendor, AIR, or somebody else if we choose to issue a new contract, to develop a shorter, leaner test, if you will. But the items will be the same, and the quality and the consistency will be there, and that's what we're most concerned about, is to make sure that we have a quality assessment, that it's still reliable and comparable. And I will also add, which I may have neglected to mention here, is that any changes and modifications, whether it's a new assessment or a modified assessment, I shouldn't use the term modified because we have a modified assessment, or an assessment that is shortened, et cetera, everything has to go through peer review and approval by the U.S. Department of Education. So currently, these are proposals. If we choose to implement them, we have to go through the same process we have in the past and get approval to administer them as a state assessment.
Okay.
Representative Lively.
So my follow-up question is, so the potential increased costs are not one-time costs, they'd be ongoing costs in relationship if everything stayed the same in relationship to what we're spending today?
Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Lively, that is correct. Yeah.
Senator Thompson.
I just wondered, have you taken this option out to the school districts and teachers, or do you just like making our life miserable?
Co-Chair Monroe, Senator Thompson, we have no interest in making your life miserable. In fact, we prefer to have you happy and content, of course. We've had conversations with superintendents and educators. We've had conversations with partners relative to these ideas, and they've been very favorably received. We have educators in the room, and I would invite you to ask them the same question. Of course, the cost is really beyond any of our controls. I mean, in order for us to do these things that we know that our educators and communities have told us they want, it'll cost more. And I'm sorry to even bring that to you, but we want it to be real pragmatic and practical relative to this vision and direction that we are proposing here. So,
Senator Thompson.
I thought I remembered you saying that once you make these changes, your goal is to get that $23 per student cost down for assessments. Would
46.
Will you be able to get that cost down? I didn't see the number that you thought maybe we could.
Co-Chair Monroe, Senator Thompson, We are confident we will get the cost down. I'm not prepared to give you a number right now because we understand vendors may be listening and we don't want them to know what our figure may be. But we are confident that we will work with them to get that price down to a manageable level and a reasonable level. And much of it also depends on the services and the supports that you get from the vendor. So some of these contracts in these other states that we consulted may include many other components that we may not need in our state or we may have the capacity to do for ourselves. So there are a lot of technical elements to it, but we're confident that it will be much less than $46 per student.
Okay. Representative Parrish.
So I might have asked this before. I feel like I've asked it before. But there was a bill in the House Ed Committee around using things like, you know, SAT or ACT mm-hmm. as the only testing that we would do for yeah. students. And while I'm not in love with the over-testing of children, you know, my interest in testing is that when we get results for kids, that it's diagnostic and that we can then turn around and use those results to help improve gaps in a child's learning. I don't know that an SAT or ACT is designed to do that. Mm-hmm. And it's certainly not aligned with trying to get kids moving into college. Right. But, you know, what's your response to that type of change when this has been the direction that you're going? And is there room to do both? Or, you know, is one better than the other? I mean, I didn't support the bill coming out of committee because I am concerned that testing we do should have a diagnostic element that we use to
right.
not just measure learning, but fix mm-hmm. learning when we've got kids mm-hmm. who've got big gaps.
Right, right. Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Parrish, thank you for your question. And absolutely, our intention is that this information is used for diagnostic purposes. We have to keep in mind that a summative assessment is really used for accountability purposes more than anything else. But we can glean information from it that we want to make readily available to teachers, especially in the grades 3-8 assessment. We used to do that with OAKS. Student had immediate access to their results. They saw their score. Teachers received feedback relative to strands, standards, and strands, and were able to modify their instruction and provide interventions and supports for students. So we hope if we were to do these modifications at the grades 3-8 level to be able to do the same thing. If at the high school level, one of the challenges that we heard is that it takes way too long for the information to get back to the students. And by the time it got back to the school, it was really not usable. So we know schools and districts have used it in different ways, but in order to provide support for that student specifically, the opportunity is lost. We know with ACT and SAT, students get the information much faster than they would under SBAC. So that is something that we would need to negotiate with the vendor to say how quickly can you provide the information back to the student, especially in high school, to determine if they need to retake the assessment or if there are other options that are available to them. One thing that we want to be mindful of is really how that information is used. So for students at the high school level, it is really designed to provide information to the school about what is possible for that student during their senior year. So that may lead to students taking different courses, accelerated courses, maybe filling some gaps that the assessment has actually revealed. So it's a different type of intervention. The bill that you referenced talks about providing students the option to choose what test to take. Under the accountability framework that's established by ESSA, the state must approve the different tests that students can access and take. The student doesn't actually get to choose. The district has to choose. So if you have a district with multiple high schools, the district will have to select the assessment that will be administered to all students, even if they wanted to take a different assessment. The challenge that we have as a state is really one of cost. Can we afford multiple? We would love to be able to go through a process where we identify multiple assessments and provide a menu of options for districts to choose from. So Bend Lapine, we know, administers ACT, and they would love to continue to do that. Hillsborough does ACT. We know other districts that may be interested in SAT. We know some districts that still want to do SBAC because they have familiarity and experience with it. We would love to go through a process through which we can identify multiple assessment. However, from a practical point of view, we just don't have the capacity to do that. We don't have the resources to support multiple assessments. And then it becomes really challenging in terms of comparability when you start to compare SAT to ACT to SBAC and other tests. And that puts a tremendous burden, not just on the state, I also believe on districts in terms of managing all of that information. So it just gets complicated very quickly. And that's why we're opting for a single test, because it addresses all of those issues of comparability, access, the accountability, the reliability. And we will make sure that these tests are aligned to the standards. We will make sure that they meet all of the accommodation and the accessibility requirements by the state and federal government. We will make sure that they meet the cultural bias standards that are required for these tests. And all of the other components that a quality assessment requires. Sorry, long answer, but I wanted to address all of those points.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you,
and
Mr.
we're going to, we've got another panel, so we're going to
just real short. Thank you, Ms. Co-Chair. Doctor, the federal participation rate requirement, remind me what that is, and are we going to have a problem with that? What's our participation rate now?
Yeah. Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Wisnett, the federal participation rate is 95%. For all groups, and it actually was even more amplified under the Every Student Succeeds Act to say it's 95% for individual groups as well. We believe that if we offer a value add, relevant, and meaningful assessment for students and families at the high school level, we will not be talking about opt-outs. We will actually see an increase in participation. Grades 3 through 8 are not impacted by opt-outs as much as the high school level. And I think if we provide an assessment that's also relevant, meaningful, shorter, provide information immediately to students and teachers, we will see the opt-outs eliminated there as well. So I think it's an opportunity to change the culture and the practice relative to state assessments.
The real quick, Mr. Coacher, we understand, though, that some of the colleges now are you know, not wanting or not going to use the tests as much as they have in the past, so that could factor into
right.
it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of us in the legislature opposed that opt-out bill vehemently. I being one. I think it was a big mistake. Senator Roman?
Okay. I was just going to say the issue is that we've got multiple kinds of testing, and what has happened is the federal government and state government has made summative the most important.
Right.
And so what Parrish was asking for is that formative assessment that we don't do as much as we used to, and it's hard to make a summative assessment a formative assessment. I mean, no matter how hard you want to do it, it's really difficult to do that.
Yeah.
My question is, we take TIMS and all that kind of stuff, and we get related to every other country and every other state, all of that kind of stuff. They do a random sample. They say if we do a big enough random sample, we can easily give you an accountability quotient for your state, your district,
right.
and so on. That's why, for me, this 95% thing doesn't make any sense in a summative assessment. We're trying to figure out how our group is doing, so why not do a random sample of whatever number of schools? You know, not every school gets the TIMS every time it comes through. You know,
right.
you'll get third grade in this school and seventh grade in this other school.
Right.
And because it's done that way, it gives you very accurate information with respect to how you are doing. That's, from my perspective, a summative assessment. Why are we not thinking about that instead of trying to make a summative assessment at the end of the deal required for everybody, and do some other kinds of assessments at the end of the test to really inform us and our teachers about how to go about doing things?
Yep. Co-Chairman Rowe, Senator Roblin, very quickly, we've given a great deal of consideration to different models of assessments, different intervals of assessments, if you will, including using formative assessment and interim assessment for accountability purposes, doing alternate years, et cetera. What it comes down to is that the law, the federal law, the Every Student Succeeds Act, requires that we test every student. Mm. annually, grades 3 through 8, and once in high school. So that is the constraint that we're operating within. We're exploring some possibilities with other states where we could participate in some kind of a national pilot relative to these kinds of assessments. So we're not excluding that option, but in terms of implementation and compliance with the law, that's what we have to do. And we would welcome your support and your investment in formative and interim assessment, because once we make the shift to formative and interim, the over-reliance on the summative assessment will reduce and go away. And we will be talking about these formative assessments that teachers use on a daily, weekly, monthly basis with students to improve their outcomes.
So. Dr. Noor, we're going to have to move on. Dr. Noor, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And let's call up the COSA folks, Mr. Golden and Heidi and Rick Cattell. Welcome. Please identify yourself and proceed.
My name is Jim Golden. I'm the superintendent of the Greater Albany Public Schools, the 13th largest school district in the state. Longtime Central Oregon resident. Thank Mr. Wisnett. And I'm currently the president of the Oregon Association of School Executives, the superintendent's leadership group. My feedback concurs with some of the things that Salam and Don talked about. I actually have the printout from the Smarter Balance. I asked for feedback from all of my staff, administrators, and so this is a summary of that feedback. The combined test at the 11th grade level, 7.5 hours, 6th to 8th grade, 6.5 hours, and 3rd to 5th grade, 6 hours. But what my teachers say is this is off for most kids by about half, so that it takes about double what the Smarter Balance says. Secondly, one of the things that folks mentioned was timely feedback. One of the things that people really loved about the Oaks test is that you got feedback immediately, so Senator Roblin would know exactly what he did on his test, and it gave strand level, as the deputy had stated, so you knew where you were weak and you knew where you were strong. And the Smarter Balance does not give it in a timely manner and does not give that specific feedback for growth. The big thing that Representative Parrish talked about is what our kids are seeing is that it stresses out a lot of our children because of the amount of time it takes, in particular kids with IEPs and kids who struggle. And as a result of this, we end up spending a lot of money on staff to do individual testing and administrative time. We figured at our two high schools for one grade that we're spending $20,000 for each high school in terms of our staff's time. So that's a grade of about 350 kids. So I would suspect that the cost at all levels is about that for any school. And then at the meaningfulness of this test, especially at the high school level, is something that we call into question because so many kids are deciding that ACT will get them into college or SAT, so why am I going to bother with this? And for kids who struggle more, they would say, well, I can do work samples so I don't have to pass this test. And therefore, the meaningfulness of this test at the high school level is really called into question. And then in particular, because you can opt out of it, people are saying, well, what are you going to do to me? Because I can do, work samples as other ways to show. And then a little sidebar is for students at the 11th grade level, you don't have math and language arts with just one grade level. You have multi-age groups. So what ends up happening is while I'm testing my 11th graders, my 9th graders and 10th graders are in a study hall, so there's wasted learning time. Yeah. So that's a quick summary of what my staff had given to me. And our staff takes it very seriously. We want to be partners with our friends at the Oregon Department of Ed. We want to provide the state with summative. So we have taken it very seriously, and we really encourage our students to take it seriously. But the amount of tests, the amount of time, the specific feedback, the lag, the lack of growth knowledge for students are some of the things that hamstring this test from our perspective.
Thank you. Thank you for your perspective. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to speak about the challenges of administering the Smarter Balanced Assessment. I'm Rick Cotterell, principal at McNary Heights Elementary School in Umatilla, and I have been involved with SBAC testing since we implemented the pilot of the test in the 2013-14 school year. Over the past 4 years, we feel that we have developed a very good understanding of what it takes to administer this test. McNary Heights is a large elementary school in a small rural district. We serve 680 students, grades K-5. 360 of them are third, fourth, and fifth graders required to take the Smarter Balanced Assessment, with one of the highest poverty rates and the second highest ELL population in the state. We are no strangers to challenge. SBAC requires a great deal of instructional time to complete. Although test administration manuals provide modest estimates, we find that it takes much more time to test our students. Our students need 3 to 4 60-minute sessions to complete the English Language Arts Computer Adaptive Test, 3 to 4 60-minute sessions to complete the English Language Arts Performance Task, 2 to 3 60-minute sessions to complete the Mathematics Computer Adaptive Test, and 1 to 2 60-minute sessions to complete the Mathematics Performance Task. That is a minimum for each McNary student. They lose 13 hours of instructional time taking those tests. Our fifth grade students also lose an additional 2 hours of instructional time taking the Oaks Science Exam, and 320 of our students are also required to take the English Language Proficiency Assessment, ELPA 21, which means another 2 to 3 hours out of the classroom. Whereas Oaks was an online multiple choice test, SBAC requires students to utilize technology in a much more sophisticated way. So they must be able to move objects, highlight text, they must be able to type into and be able to edit their responses, and to utilize a number of embedded supports within the test. We found early on our students do not have the experience with computers needed to pull that off, and so we have actually now given up an entire 9 weeks of music and art in order to prepare our students to take SBAC. During that time, each student attends 1 hour a week of technology class where they learn to type, where they learn to edit text, and where they learn to, or where they take the SBAC practice and training tests. In addition to lost instructional time, SBAC also requires a large investment of staff time. So teachers spend 2 of our professional development afternoons viewing testing modules required to administer the test, and also identifying and entering students who need designated supports and accommodations to take the test. Our office manager and attendance secretary spend approximately 2 days printing, cutting, and sorting the testing cards we use to help students log into the test and to track their progress. And I personally spend several hours developing a schedule of when and where students will do their testing. Administering SBAC requires about 3 hours of testing per day for the last 8 weeks of our school year. And that's 120 hours of total testing time. Our librarian and classroom and a classroom assistant are each pulled from their normal duties in order to staff or to be our test administrators in our 2 testing zones. One manages our only computer lab in our building, and the other manages a bank of computers that we have in our library. So that's 120 hours that this assistant is not working in classrooms. That's 120 hours students cannot access the online resources in our computer lab, and 120 hours students cannot access books in our library. For our building alone, or in addition, our assistant principal, classroom teachers, and myself spend a great deal of time in the computer labs helping students log in, responding to computer glitches, and helping with the headphone issues that inevitably arise. We're looking at a total staffing cost in our building just to pull off the SBAC testing of just over $19,000. I believe that the addition of Chromebook carts this year would help us reduce the amount of time we spend testing students by allowing teachers to test in their classrooms, but doing so means that you have to clear the walls of all the instructional materials that teachers have in their classroom. If you've ever been in an elementary school classroom, that's 120 hours of work itself. So. But the real reason we can't do that is because teachers still need to teach the other 5 hours of their day, and they need those things on their walls in order to be effective doing so. I'm not here to debate the effectiveness of the test, but I can't help but wonder what we could do if our students got back some of those 13-plus hours of lost instructional time, what classrooms could do with an additional 120 hours of assistance in the classroom, and what 120 hours of access to computer labs and libraries would look like for my students, and what it would mean for me to be in the classroom a little more, helping to coach our teachers. It's my hope that we can find a less labor-intensive form of assessment that will help me answer those very questions. And thank you for your time.
Boy, they're just reinforcing what I said and about an hour ago.
Are kids ever absent?
That's another glitch.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Monroe, members of the committee. I'm Heidi Sipes, superintendent of Umatilla, past president of the Oregon Association of School Executives, and just really want to reiterate what was said by these two fine gentlemen. Also, the thing that was very uplifting to me was when we were comparing costs this morning, about 350 kids in Greater Albany School District, about $20,000. 350 kids in Umatilla, about $20,000. Gives me confidence that for every 350 kids, we're at about $20,000 of staffing time for administration of tests, which works out to roughly $14 million of staffing time across the state to administer the test. My biggest concern is not testing. It's actually impact of testing and purpose of the testing. And so I'm very excited to see some of the potential changes on the horizon from the proposal with the Oregon Department of Ed. I believe if we could reduce the required testing for students, then we could also focus more on relevance for our high school students, looking at maybe ASVAB, ACT, SAT, perhaps work keys, some really relevant assessments for our kids. We could get a greater bang for our buck and also provide more meaningful work for students. The thing that causes me some dismay is of all those hours of lost instruction at McNary, none of that information really provides what we need to improve instruction for kids. That's solely accountability. That's it. We do that test because we need to be held accountable, not because that's what helps us improve our kids. On top of those assessments, we're doing our own formative assessments and our own planning for better instruction off of our local assessments because we don't get the data that we need. And then just the other thing to think about is our students were also selected for NAEP and PISA this year as well. So in addition to SBAC this spring, our teachers and principals have also been preparing kids for PISA testing and NAEP testing on top of ELPA and on top of SBAC. And so I just really appreciate the conversation and thank you for your time.
Well, thank you, Senator Roblin.
I hope that we are thinking about the Department of Ed that you, Heidi and you guys from Umatilla, it's not a short drive and you come here a lot. We should probably reimburse you for some of your travel. You're on other boards and I appreciate the willingness of people in rural areas to be engaged and involved so that your voices get heard. But it can't be easy for you guys to have to make that trip. So thank you.
Thank you. This afternoon, you may notice some of the cutest kids you've ever observed on your Capitol steps because we brought kids with us today, too.
That's a good thing.
Senator Thompson.
I just have a quick question. So if you change the tests again, does that also change the curriculum in all the classrooms again, or will that stay the standard? Because that's always a... every time you change a testing system, seems like you have to change the curriculum.
Chairman Rowe, members of the committee, Senator Thompson, I believe the key to this is that the standards are remaining the same. So the assessments can change as long as they're focused on an interpretation of those same standards. So when the current assessments offered are aligned to our standards, then the instruction may remain as is with the focus on the current standards. What really disrupts us is when the standards change, because that's when instruction changes.
And I don't think anybody has trouble with the standards. They're rigorous. They're the right targets. But we know that there can be, and the deputy Salam alluded to it, there has to be a shorter test. It's too much time for not enough great feedback.
Okay. Additional questions? Thank you very much. We appreciate your input.
Thank you.
We're working hard on this. We know that there's got to be a better way in terms of both teaching savings of teaching time, which is my number one goal. I've been an educator for 50 years. And then secondly, of course, we're required by budget laws to have any fiscal savings we possibly can. So the department, Salam, we meet with him regularly. We're working hard on that, on this issue, and as a subcommittee. And we thank you so much for your input. And Mr. Wilson, before we adjourn?
Just scheduling. Tomorrow will be English Language Learner Programs. ODE will be presenting that. And then Thursday, no meeting this week. And then Monday is back on. I apologize, but to get any meeting time, we're going to have to meet on Mondays.
Well, it's not your fault. Somebody upstairs decided to have a joint revenue committee meet at this time.
I thought you had more clout than
this. I know. Thank you, everybody, for coming, and we're adjourned. we're adjourned. Everybody for coming, and